Hello and welcome to Tamron Recipes, brought to you by Tamron USA and Skip Cohen University. We bring on photographic artists as our creative chefs and discuss their amazing photographs as our favorite visually delicious dishes. The Tamron Kitchen is full of the greatest imaging cuisines and recipes in the industry, and we are so looking forward to sharing some of that with you today. And now more than ever, it's so important that we stay inspired as creatives. So we are wrapping up 2020 with a very, very special dish today. So let's get to the good stuff. I'm Shamira Young, and I'm joined by my co-chef and co-host, Skip Cohen. Skip.
Hey.
How are you?
This is a very strange day to be doing this because as I complain about, 60 degree weather Florida this morning, I was talking to Dr. T at Platypod, and they got 8 inches of snow in Jersey, and I know that most of the East Coast just got hammered.
Yeah.
So I can't really complain about much of anything,
and
certainly
degrees.
Not in terms of the weather.
Come on.
I know. Well, we've got a great podcast today, and this is a lot of fun because in the hierarchy of why people hire a professional photographer, it's always been brides, babies, and pets. That's number 1, 2, and 3. And I doubt that that's changed from when the study was first done 20, 25 years ago by Kodak. However, what has changed it is the pandemic. Mm. And weddings for this year, so many of them have been postponed until after the pandemic and things change. And new babies, you've got a lot of moms and parents that are concerned because of COVID. So I'm thinking that pets has moved into the number one spot, but not just for why people hire a photographer, but because of what people are photographing and the subjects they're choosing the most right now, because our pets at home really have helped keep us. I know for me and Sheila, they've helped keep us grounded through all the craziness of the last 9 months. So we've got Molly Dombrowski here today joining us, and I'm positive that she is the youngest chef that we've ever had in the Tamron Kitchen. She graduated from college in 2019, but she's also a prime example of something that our mutual buddy Scott Bourne wrote about when he said photography is the great equalizer. It doesn't matter how old you are, how long you've been doing it, what your financial situation is, what you look like, anything. It's sort of like the concept of the voice, where it's in the quality of your images. And Molly's favorite subjects are two furry friends, Milo and Summit. And she's a storyteller. She's capturing their story along with creating her own story now. And we're really excited to have her here today because, like I said, our pets have helped us all stay grounded. And everybody knows if you're a pet owner, they are like your own children. So on that note, Molly, this is the cue for your lips to move. Welcome to Tamron Recipes.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited to talk to you today.
Well, we're glad to have you here.
Yes. Now, Molly, Skip was whining about the 60-degree weather that he has in Florida. Pray tell, how many inches of snow did you get last night?
Yeah. I've got about 10 inches outside of my door right now, but, appreciate all 10 of them.
Oh, that's crazy. And here in Michigan, we have maybe 2 or 3, so you have both of us beat, for sure.
it's definitely been crazy.
We are so thrilled to have you on the show. I love your imagery. I mean, just looking at any type of pets, I get a rush of happy chemicals through my body. So this is going to be such an awesome interview, and we just want to kick it off with our favorite first question. Tell us about your background and how you ended up doing what you're doing today.
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty funny story. I was just in my apartment in college one day, and I had found my mom's old Nikon Coolpix camera, which is just a point and shoot camera, and I thought to myself, I should make a Christmas card of my dog because I'm totally obsessed with him. And I thought it would be really funny and give everyone a chuckle. So picked up the camera, started taking some pictures of him, and I really, really enjoyed it. So I decided to make him an Instagram. From there, I saw what could be, I was seeing all these insane pictures of people's dogs. And I wanted to take pictures like that of my dog. So slowly I like kind of researched into it, but you know, I didn't have any money for a camera. So saved up for a long time, went to my local Best Buy, picked up a Canon Rebel it was. And the Best Buy guy told me, I don't think you should buy that one. I think you should go for this Sony mirrorless. It's like the future of cameras. And so I didn't agree with him. I bought the Canon, and a few days later I came back in, I returned it, and I was like, you know what, you're right. I'm going to go for the Sony. And I've been Sony ever since, just practicing all the time. And yeah, it's been fun.
It's really interesting because so many of our guests have been photographers for a long time. We've had several guests on that were absolutely not full-time working professionals, but it's their passion for the craft. Mm-hmm. And without question, you have the bug. And
sure,
the pups add to it because you've got a never-ending source of subject matter.
Yeah, they always give me new content. They're always doing something crazy.
How often do you get out to photograph?
I guess I can go through periods of time where I'm going out every single day, just taking any kinds of photos, just even if I don't share them, just photos for myself, photos to practice. But then there are times where, you know, life gets a little hectic and I'm not taking my camera out for a month or two at a time. So it definitely varies, but I try to at least take them out for photos 3 times a week if I can.
Give us a brief description of the two dogs, because these are not little critters.
Oh no, they're big boys. So Milo is my first dog. I got him summer going into my junior year of college, much against my parents' wishes. I actually kept him secret from my parents until I had to go home. And I was like, surprise, here's my dog. But he was a foster fail from the local rescue in Auburn, Alabama. He was just so scared of everything. It was really, really saddening to see. He clearly had never been inside. He didn't have any training whatsoever or really much interaction with people or other dogs. So it was really sweet. He immediately was attached to me and so good. He just wanted to be good and to be loved. So yeah, we basically just hung out in college together for a while. He came to parties with me. He went to football games. And it was really great. And he's so snuggly and so loving. He's never met a stranger that he doesn't immediately love. He's really reserved around other dogs. He just wants to hang out with his brother Summit and me and any other person that will give him attention. And then Summit, he's a Siberian Husky. I get asked this question probably 200 times a day. I got him going into my last semester of college I picked him up at a gas station. It was like a super weird situation. Probably wouldn't recommend it to anyone else, but I ended up getting, you know, the dog of my dreams. He's just so good. And he just always listens to me and his focus is on me, and I can teach him any trick. He's so smart. Like, it's truly uncanny sometimes. He can figure out how to open doors. It's crazy. But he's just a goofball, total goofball. He's not so much cuddly like Milo, so it's kind of nice to have this balance. I don't have both dogs always trying to be on top of me at all times. He prefers to just follow closely and not really get too close.
And what are the weights of the two dogs?
So Milo's about 60 pounds and Summit's like 52.
Summit has these eyes that just, they pierce into your soul looking mm-hmm. at him. And I may have to follow these two on Instagram. I don't think I've ever shared this on the show. I follow more animals than I do people on Instagram. No joke. Just because it's so entertaining and so fun. And I'm curious, so obviously you have quite a bit of experience working with these two knuckleheads. What common tips have you found as it relates to pet photography? What tips might you have for for those listening who are looking to learn how to interact with animals? Because it is quite a bit different than people. What tips have you picked up along the way?
The first tip I like to tell everyone is, you know, you have to train your dog. They have to know some basic commands. Otherwise, you're going to have no luck unless you're only getting action shots of them. And even then, it can be difficult if they're just running around mad, you know? So they definitely have to have like a good stay, come, sit. My dogs are trained to look at the camera, look at me when I ask them to focus, which is really funny. People love that when they are watching it in action. So that would be my first tip for sure, would just be training your dog to focus on you and listen to you, so you can get whatever shot you'd like. And then my next tip that I like to tell people is to get down on their eye level. I know a lot of photographers and people who they don't kneel down and get to eye level with their dog. And, you know, those don't really produce the good shots where you get a lot of the expression and body language in it.
For sure.
Yeah. And then I guess lastly would just be bring enough treats and don't run out of treats.
Am I right that a lot of times you're photographing them off leash?
Yes. So I have trained my dogs, you know, by myself for a long time, but they actually did go to a professional trainer as well, just to clean up, because sometimes you hit a wall with your own dog in training. So yeah, I sent them both to professional training. So they're very, very well behaved and under control while off leash.
Any crazy mishaps that you run into that you said, oh, wow, I got to remember not to do that again?
I mean, we've had some crazy things happen. We've definitely had other people's dogs off leash, you know, run up to us and just create a scene, which is never fun. definitely had Summit run after a squirrel once. We ran into a bear before. Yeah. We were hiking in Jersey and I came off this clearing that was in the middle of the hike, and all of a sudden I look across the clearing from me and there's a black bear standing straight up looking right at us, and both my dogs are off leash and they're looking at it like it's a piece of meat, like they want to take a chunk out of it.
Okay.
So they're off leash. I slowly backed away into the bush and back to the trail, and I called them to me and they were just eyeing up this bear. I told them to come, and luckily they, because of their training, just dropped it and immediately came back to me, and we just basically hauled ass to the trailhead.
Talk about training being more important than ever. Wow.
Exactly.
I mean,
that would certainly get my attention. Of course, I think I'd forget. I'd be running and I'd forget to call the dogs. So.
Yeah. Well, luckily black bears are also not the worst animal to run into on a trail. They scare really easily. So, you know, I actually bought bear bells shortly after that, just so I wouldn't have that situation again. But I've ran into a moose before in Wyoming, and that was probably a lot scarier.
This is funny. When you said you run into a bear before, I figured, all right, maybe it was on your recent trip to Colorado. I'm thinking this is all coming out of the West. And until you've lived in New Jersey, I don't think people realize that between both the deer population and bears, there are a lot of critters in New Jersey.
Oh, there's a ton. Yeah.
This brings up an interesting point about not just safety, but travel, because we were talking in our pre-interview chat that we do, we were talking about the different places that you've traveled with your two fur buddies. And I'm curious, could you go into any tips that you have as far as traveling with your pets, be it safety or just logistics? Because I'm sure you've run into a lot of interesting situations or things that you have to consider.
So I'd say first and foremost, you know, check national websites, national forest websites, national park websites about dog friendliness and the certain rules that each forest or park may have. So for example, national parks, typically they are not allowed outside of 6 to 10 feet of the street. and they must be leashed at all times. So, you know, I've taken them to Yellowstone before, which is not the most dog friendly park. So they basically stayed in the car the whole time or were on leash right off of the street. So they weren't allowed to explore the park at all. Then various national forests have different rules that all of them, you know, slightly differ between states and whatnot. So that would be my first thing. Make sure you look into that before you plan a huge trip somewhere. Make sure that you're going to follow the rules because you don't want to get fines and you don't want to hurt the environment at all. And then next, I would say, if you're traveling by car, like, learn how to pack efficiently because you want the dogs to have as much space as possible. Because if they're going to be in the car 17 plus hours a day, which sometimes they are, you know, they need space to sleep and relax and move and stretch and, you know, not get in each other's faces too much because we don't want any of them getting in scuffles. Taking breaks often. Every time I stop at a gas station, you know, we go for a walk until they go to the bathroom. And I give them lots of chews to keep their minds occupied while in the car, you know, just stuff like that.
Yeah, this the concept of traveling with your dogs, I mean, it's certainly a lot to consider. I didn't know that about the national parks. And it makes me think of my sister. I'm sure she won't mind me sharing the story, but she had a 2-hour drive to come see me recently, and she hit a pothole, got a flat tire, kind of traumatized her dog. That one little thing. And now she's trying to retrain her dog because every little bump in the road that they hit, her dog freaks out. It's a little 7-pound min pin. It's the most adorable thing ever. But it's things that people really would not consider until you're, you know, in the act of traveling with your animals. And just to kind of switch gears a bit, I'd love to hear about the photo that you took of Summit that we have on Skip's blog at Skip Cone University. And I'd love to dive into the backstory behind this image because the moment I saw this, Summit, he's looking like a boss. And he's got the goggles on, and it's such a dramatic and cool image. Can you tell us how you got it, as well as the lenses that you used to get it?
Yeah, absolutely. So this was a trip that was kind of a spur-of-the-moment, spontaneous trip. One of my best friends texted me and was like, I want you to take me on a crazy trip this weekend. And I was like, okay. So got right to planning it. Colorado is one of my favorite places to visit. Relatively cheap flight. So three of us booked a flight, booked a hotel, and, you know, busted out to Colorado. So we were around the Crested Butte area to see the aspen trees change colors. And it was so stunning. But something about the Great Sand Dunes is just so incredible to me. I said to them, do you guys want to go down? It's 4 hours driving each way, but I promise it's totally worth it. So we debated for a while, and then we ended up going. So we got there, and we were actually planning to do the sand surfing. So basically, you can, like, rent a sandboard and surf these dunes almost like a wave. But it was closed. So we got to the park. We're like, oh, this kind of stinks. We don't know what to do. So we just started hiking up these sand dunes. And I don't know if you guys have ever hiked dunes before, but it's tough. It hurts. I mean, my calves were killing me and I was so out of breath. It took us like an hour or 45 minutes to get to where this photo was taken. We're like halfway up, we're considering going down, and we see people coming down. They're like, don't stop, it's so worth it. So we continued up, and we literally got there at this perfect lighting time where the sun's setting and the mountains are kind of shadowed and just beautiful. So of course I'm like, all right, I'm gonna get some content right now. And my favorite thing to do is shoot against the sun. I know that, like, a lot of photographers don't like that, but it's definitely one of my favorite things to do. So it just happened to be perfectly setting right over this dune. So I got him to sit and listen to me, and he's just naturally a badass. So he's just doing what he does. And I was able to capture this really great photo. This is with my Tamron 28 to 75 millimeter. which is most definitely my go-to for, you know, hiking or anything where I'm going to be doing some activity while holding my camera, just because I find it gives me the best range that I would need on a hike. Because sometimes you're in a tight trail and you need a 28, but sometimes you're not, and you would like that creaminess of the 75. So yeah, that's my go-to.
All right. So getting out to Colorado, you mentioned, you know, it's a cheap flight. Talk about things that you've had to do. I know a lot of people, me included, have always been afraid to take a dog on a plane, especially when my last dog was bigger and I would have had to crate her. What tips do you have for people that fly with pups or think they want to?
Yeah. So Summit's actually my ESA. So he's allowed to sit in cabin with me at my feet. But I still do know a lot about putting dogs in cabin because I have considered it many times to bring Milo somewhere. So the first thing that's really important would be to get a really sturdy crate that is approved by, I'm not sure what it is, I think TSA or whatnot, to be put in cargo. So luckily I do have one of those. In addition to that, you're going to need a water pail in there, you know, just like a regular pail of water that can be hung up so it doesn't spill. You also need two crate mats, one that is water absorbent and one that is water resistant in case, you know, an accident happens. In addition to that, I did a bunch of research on the different airlines and their policies, as well as, you know, incidences they may have. It's public record, so you can go and just probably Google, you know, United or whatnot, blah, 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 2020 animal cargo incidences, and it'll give you numbers of, you know, injuries, deaths, unfortunately, and then also like total number of pets transported. So, you know, in my research, I would consider flying my dogs American Airlines. Alaska would be my first option, though. They have phenomenal, you know, policies, and they have not had any animal deaths on 500,000 different transports. So they've got the best numbers. They're who I would go with if I was going to fly an animal in cargo.
Wow. I never thought about doing that kind of research, because I think we probably all have heard horror stories over the years where, you know, you go down to baggage claim to get the pup, and the pup has either been seriously injured or, God forbid, has died on the flight. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Well, you mentioned before that just before we got started, you've had them in 20 some states. Mm-hmm. Have you driven most of those, or are you mixing it up, driving and flying?
Yeah, I would say I've driven to all of them except for Colorado.
What issues do you have with, let's see, I'm sorry, it's Milo that's on the plane with you, right?
Summit.
Oh, Summit. Okay. And Milo winds up getting shipped. Any issues that come up in, I mean, I don't know what else to call it, separation anxiety between the two?
So actually, I don't bring Milo when I do that, just because he is a breed that could have problems being in cargo. I just don't take the risk for it. Also, a lot of airlines just have his breed banned anyway. So he actually stays home and has a lazy weekend with my parents or friends, which he totally enjoys because he is one lazy boy. but it's actually funny. I try really hard to make sure that they don't get separation anxiety from either myself or each other. So we spend lots of time doing things without both of them. So sometimes I'll just take Summit somewhere. Sometimes I'll just take Milo somewhere. You know, oftentimes I leave them without me completely. So, you know, I've really worked hard to train them and make sure that they're okay to be on their own or with new people.
Well, I know we're just about out of time, but I love the concept. I never had two dogs at the same time until a year ago. And I know that watching them interact has been amazing. I know that every time I go to try and get, now my two are not trained like your two. It's like, as soon as I pull the camera out, they stop doing whatever they're doing. And I can't capture that improv moment. That's just going to be spontaneous. Like I said, I've never had two dogs until this last year. And I'm amazed at the way our two dogs really are sisters, in the same way you refer to your two guys as brothers, and they play mm-hmm. together, they interact together, they stress together, they protect together. Mm-hmm. Are there tips that you have for people at home that would add to when and how to get photographs of them interacting?
So I guess the best thing I would suggest is just being prepared always, because sometimes they want to interact, you know, and sometimes they are just going to nap. I do a lot of tricks where I train them together at the same time to, you know, perform something together. And that really helps because, you know, they know that's what they are supposed to be doing. So if I want them in a photo together, they've got it down pat. They're ready to go. Other than that, when I'm taking them out to somewhere beautiful to play, I mean, they're just constantly playing. So I don't really have any problems with that. You know, they're just entertaining each other and having a good time. And I'm just there to, you know, try to capture whatever I can.
Very cool.
So Molly, our usual close is, what advice would you give photographers just starting out today? But the cool thing about you being our youngest chef in the Tamron Kitchen to date is that in a lot of ways, your experience is doing a lot of things that are defined as just starting out. One of the cool things about the way you got almost, I don't want to say an overnight foothold, but got attention, relates to social media and Instagram. So what advice would you have for photographers that are getting started today and want to get their work out there and be seen?
For some advice on, you know, social media and stuff is, you know, engagement and making sure that you engage with your audience and you have interesting things to say. Definitely have like some context to your photos, maybe a little backstory. People always love, you know, to kind of get to know the person behind these beautiful images. I find that they are just as interested in my life, even as boring as it might be, as they are in these crazy photos that I have. And, you know, they want to interact and, you know, they want to see that you appreciate them as much as they appreciate your photos. So commenting back on people, having conversations, making real relationships, I would say is definitely the most important thing to succeed.
I love this. I've got this big smile on my face because Shamira and I have talked with a lot of different Tamron chefs about the importance, yes, of relationship building. And you just kind of brought it all together on the social media plane of, you know, building those relationships, being relatable, mm-hmm, interacting, not just putting up your images and saying, hey guys, look at what I did. But making it a two-way street. That's really good advice from our youngest chef to
date. That is perfect. That is perfect. And Molly, where can folks check out your work online?
Yeah, so I've made a website called findyoursummit.org, and that's where I have, you know, links to my Instagram. I have my galleries in there, contact information, all of that.
Perfect. We will make sure and put that in the show notes. And Skip, as always, where can folks find you?
Well, Shamira, it's always the same. Everything I write is at skipcohenuniversity.com. And you'll also find me at skip@mei500.com. And I'm Skip Cohen on Twitter and Skip Cohen on Facebook. And we always encourage everybody and you guys out there to write to us if there's something special you'd like us to be talking about. We love working with the team at Tamron, and it's just been a great relationship. And this is the last one for 2020, but we're coming up with a whole new season in 2021. And Shamira, where do they go to find you?
Folks can send me an email at shamira@shamirastudios.com. That is my first name, C-H-A-M-I-R-A, @shamirastudios.com. We love getting feedback and ideas from our listeners because we always want to hear from the wonderful people who listen to this show. And it shapes how we move forward with the show as we go into 2021. And I don't know about you, but I'm pretty excited for 2021. So Molly, thank you again. This was just amazing. This was fantastic. We really appreciate it.
This has been a lot of fun. And it really is true about photography being the great equalizer, because your images are what everybody is seeing, but your background. And as you explore new things with Milo and Summit, it's just going to be fun to follow your travels.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate both you guys taking the time to talk to me. I had, you know, so much fun chatting with you guys.
Awesome. And we want to thank our listeners for joining us today as well on this episode of Tamron Recipes, brought to you by Tamron USA and Skip Cohen University.